And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this July 4th weekend comes at the end of 2 weeks in which six reactionary Republicans have attempted to rewrite the American Constitution in very fundamental ways, and in ways which really represent the culmination of two generations' worth of struggle by reactionary forces to do it. This was the week of their triumph. Roe versus Wade is, of course, the most famous and the one that people paying attention to the most. But there's the way the government is organized, the way it's structured, the way it functions, how we vote, whether we vote, whether the votes get counted or will be counted, whether we can combat climate change, whether your rights when you're if you're arrested, whether you still have the right to be told what your rights are, all of that gone, which they've been, you know, struggling to get rid of. And they did get rid of it. What's the way forward? A lot of people are angry and more people are demoralized. What do you think?
Well, the way forward is not to give up. First you have to get mad and then you have to do something about it.
Correct.
And it's up to the Democrats to harness that anger. I mean, anger and resentment have been motivating the right wing and this MAGA wing of the Republican Party now for years. And it certainly rests heavily in the psyche of Justice Clarence Thomas, who seems to exist to do nothing but create problems and to take America back. It's not enough that, when they talk about what happened with Roe v. Wade, I mean, there's a concrete part of it, and then there's the theoretical part of it. The concrete part is what they've done to women and for women's rights. The theoretical part is what they've done and what they intend to do to what generally is the right of privacy.
That's right.
And
in their view, it doesn't exist.
Right. I mean, they're back to Robert Borkian theories and what have you.
Yeah.
And, he never made it to the Supreme Court, but now his jurisprudence has. Or
well put. That's exactly right. He didn't make it, but his ideas have.
Yeah. And
that often happens. It happened with Moses, right? You can't answer the promised land, but the others will.
Well, yeah, or let my people go. No, took them 10 times to do that.
Yeah.
But remember my theoretical framework that I always talk about from the Lewis Powell memo is, first of all, you have to think long term.
And by Lewis Powell is one of the founders of this drive.
Right. Although, paradoxically, he was in the majority on the Roe versus Wade opinion.
Right. But in terms of deregulation, that's him all the way.
Yep. The second part is that ideas matter. And these folks have been putting out ideas, no matter how crazy they are or how unsubstantiated they are, but they keep putting them out there and finding people to justify these ideas. And then the third part of what has to be done is controlling the communications, and that's what's come in with what they do all the time. They have now a huge echo chamber with Fox News, but also with these groups that they put together, these think tanks that put out papers and put out propaganda to supply them. And then the fourth thing that I talk about is always play offense. And these people are always attacking. They never back down. They never apologize. They never show any shame. They just keep going at it and going at it and going at it.
I think that's the most important thing. They keep going at it. And the other side doesn't go at it.
Right.
They don't go at it. They don't have consistent leadership. They don't go at it. Howard Dean says, let's organize in all the states. Let's organize in all the counties. They get rid of him.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Why'd they get rid of him? What was wrong with that? And not only did they get rid of him, they got rid of the idea. Obama scores a smashing victory. As soon as he takes the oath of office, he dissolves his organization. What's the logic here?
No. Yep. And it was only, you know, the Democrats have had this top-down strategy. They keep their eye on the presidency instead of the bottom-up strategy.
Yeah, look at how disastrous that is. They got the presidency,
sure.
Right?
They got
the presidency. He can't get a single bill passed.
Right. How many thousand offices did the Democrats lose under Obama in state offices?
Yeah, and how many states did they lose?
A lot.
Yeah, exactly.
They lost. There are 30 states that both houses of the legislature are controlled by Republicans to this
right.
day.
Right.
And that does not bode.
And as soon as they control it, they make sure they're not going to lose control, even if they lose the vote.
Right. The gerrymandering and what have you. I mean, we talked about in North Carolina a couple of years ago when they lost the governorship. What they did is they went and they stripped the governor of the power to do things.
They're doing better in Wisconsin now.
Yeah, Wisconsin this week, what happened is the governor has the right to appoint boards. They didn't take that right away from him. What they did is they refused to approve anybody that he appointed. And then the Supreme Court, which is 4-3 Republican, went along with it. What they said is that the person who's currently in a seat, whose term has ended, can remain in that seat because the Democrats or the state Senate has not approved anybody as a successor. So instead of declaring
right,
that,
in other words, the governor appointed a successor. The Republicans refused to meet on it, refused to vote on it. So the Republican who's in office, but whose term has ended, doesn't leave. And the Republican Supreme Court says, of course, he doesn't have to leave.
Instead of saying it's vacant.
Yeah. Instead of saying it's vacant, doesn't have to leave. So,
on
the one hand, they take away the governor's power by saying you don't have this right. On the other hand, they don't bother with that. They just don't confirm anybody. Okay.
Right.
By the way, the Republicans will do the same thing to Biden. McConnell said that if they have the majority in the Senate in this coming election, coming out of the election, they will not approve any Biden appointments. He didn't quite say it in those words. He says they'll have to take serious looks at them. That means we won't approve him. This is the guy who decided not to consider a Supreme Court nomination made a year before the elections were coming, because it was a Democrat who made the appointment, but who rushed through a Supreme Court nomination in 6 weeks. 6 weeks, right? 5 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
When it was Trump.
And he
doesn't like Trump.
Right. But he likes the justices that he's appointed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, McConnell's also doing another power play. As we found out with the pandemic and the COVID and the supply chain, the United States and the world ran seriously short on semiconductor chips. And as a result, we have a major bipartisan support for helping the semiconductor industry build plants here and bring the industry back on shore.
Which, by the way, will take at least 5 years once they decide to do it.
Yeah.
These are not plants that get built tomorrow, overnight.
No. But there's huge support for it. And what does Mitch McConnell do? All of a sudden, he comes up this week and says, you know, we're going to filibuster that bill, even though it passed the Senate once with his vote, and then it went to the House, who passed a different version. So you need reconciliation, and they're coming along with the reconciliation. He says, "We're not going to allow it, unless the Democrats pledge that they won't pass through major reform legislation through reconciliation, which they only need 50 votes for."
Right. Right. In other words, you got the 50 votes, but we're not going to let you use them.
Right.
It's exactly like the Wisconsin thing. It's exactly like the North Carolina thing. It's just fitting the circumstances of the situation with the same approach. The Republicans, no matter who they are, no matter what branch, whether they're MAGATs or they're Mitchites or whatever, their attitude is they're the only ones who have the right to rule. Nobody else has the right to rule. Only they.
But it, you know, and it's changed over time. You've heard me say this for a while now, that somewhere along around the Gingrich time, that this, I called it a conceit or hubris, that only they should be ruling. But this has now become ingrained as a religious thing with them, that the Democrats are evil and amoral, and as a result, they don't deserve to rule in any manner. And that's something that's been animated.
It's beyond that they don't deserve to rule. It's that it's satanic if they rule.
Right.
They are the agents of Satan.
Yes, and that's where you get this crazy stuff that they're pedophiles or they're groomers, and things like that. You know, as crazy as we think it is, you know, we talk about Team Normal, things are or should be normal, but they're not. The Republicans are on Team Crazy.
Well, and, except that that makes it normal.
Right.
After all, normal is only the what most people do. If we have a two-party system and one of the parties acts this way, that's normal. That's all. Now, the other side has to figure out how to cope with that. The other side, in our situation, has not figured that out. Ever since George Bush became president because Antonin Scalia gave it to him, the Democrats have been at a loss about what to do. They haven't been able to cope. This leadership of the Democratic Party that exists today, which has existed for the last generation, has yet to come up with a strategy to cope with this in any successful way.
And one of the things when George W. Bush became president is that they lost control of the Supreme Court.
That's
had
right.
Al Gore been the president, they would have had those Roberts and Alito seats. And certainly had Trump not become president, they would have the other three seats.
That's right. But you know what it is? I would have won the lottery if I'd have bought a ticket.
Yes. There's an old joke like that about that, too.
Yeah. Well, but that's not. But in this case, it's not a joke. If they pretend to be the political leadership of the liberal forces of the nation, they have an obligation to come up with a winning strategy. They haven't done it. They haven't done it. Quit. That's all. You did what you could do. Quit. Let other people try.
You know, this is, in some ways, it's a little bit of Bannonism, too, is you throw so much stuff up there that it, and so many out-of-the-box or out-of-the-normal ways of treating democracy that it's hard for the Democrats to cope or come to a cohesive answer to these things. I mean, now they have this theory going that they're going to hear a case from North Carolina on something called the independent legislature theory.
Which, by the way, also was parallel with a case from Pennsylvania. There were two cases. They took the North Carolina case, but the Pennsylvania case is identical. And I'm proud to say the identical, this Pennsylvania case, one of the three plaintiffs in the Pennsylvania case is one of our three county commissioners here in Susquehanna County.
Well,
so this is local news.
Maybe a footnote in a Supreme Court opinion.
Yeah.
But in any event, there's a provision that talks about the elections of federal officers are to be controlled by state legislatures. Now, up until now, over 200 years, what that meant is that you have to pass a law. And if you have to pass a law, it has to be approved by the governor. Or if he vetoes it, or she vetoes it, then you have to override the veto. And the law also has to be consistent with the state constitutions. All of a sudden...
Which was at play during the Gore election, the first Gore, the Gore
right.
Bush election. Yeah.
Right, right. And all of a sudden now they have this theory, and they have at least four votes for it, and probably Amy Coney Barrett's five, that says when they say legislature, they don't mean legislative action in the form of bills through the normal sense, What they mean is the legislature just gets to say who wins an election or what. So in theory, what like Pennsylvania, where Joe Biden won by 80,000 votes, and there were disputes that went to the court and were not nothing came of them. The legislature would just pass resolutions in the House and the Senate. The Republicans have both houses, and they would say, we declare that the correct electors are not those appointed by Joe Biden, but those of Donald Trump. And they would send those on to the onto the Electoral College.
And you could not review this in the court. There'd be no way to sue against that, because the independent electoral, the independent legislative theory says that the courts have no jurisdiction in this matter, only the legislature.
Right, and this is something that, that Judge Michael Luttig that testified in the hearings last week, said is a great danger to democracy, to the republic. But they don't seem to care. The Republicans don't care. This is all about power. This is authoritarianism. This is neo-fascism.
And by the way, they're going to take this. They've taken this case. They're going to argue this case in the next term, and they will decide it in the next term. And you know as well as I know that these people don't take a case except as a dog whistle to people to say to the right wingers, give us a case that we can rule on.
Right.
They mean to approve this independent legislature.
Yeah, these things are all set up. I mean, Citizens United was all set up by the Federalist Society.
Yeah.
And these groups.
And the whole thing is preposterous from the viewpoint of history. What they're arguing on this independent legislature has nothing to do with the actual history of the country, although they have a gigantic historical exposition, all made up, all distorted, all half-truths, all of it in conflict with the actual structure of the American government, which is supposed to be checks and balances. This would be the only part of the American government not subject to checks and balances. But, of course, it's the critical part because it would determine all the other parts.
Now, in that case involving the EPA this week, that overruled the ability of the administrative agency to make certain rules or to enforce certain rules, Elena Kagan issued a dissent, and she not only dissented in the result, but she went after the theory. You know, they talked about originalism or textualism now is their term. What does the text say? What does the text mean? And what she said is that they go to textualism only when it suits their purpose. When it doesn't suit their purpose, they change the rule.
Naturally.
They don't use it. And of course, as she mentioned, what you just mentioned is these rules were made up of, out of whole cloth. They never existed before. And for years, the Republicans have attacked the legislature as being, the courts as being activist courts.
Right.
And
there can't be more activist courts than this court. Right?
Than this court. Right.
Absolutely. And by the way, this court, which is basing itself on made-up history, is really well-structured to issue its findings based on history. They don't have any historians. The people who work in the court are people trained in the law, not in history. And the people who draft the opinions and who do the research are people in their 20s who have just come out of law school. They never study history. They study how to read previous Supreme Court decisions. That's what they know, all of which they now say don't count.
Well, don't forget, though, you do have amicus briefs that can be put together by historians, but
it could be. But that's not the structure of the court. That means you have the right to do it if you do it. But the court itself is not structured to. Yeah, they have the right to ignore it. Exactly.
Yeah, I know Joseph Ellis, who's one of the foremost historians, particularly on colonial America and the early America, has vehemently attacked the idea of originalism. He said there was no consensus as to what things were, and they had no thought of just having a stagnant constitution rooted in the 18th century. They realized the founders realized that things would change over time and would have to adapt.
They wrote it.
Yeah, they wrote it. Jefferson wrote it, and Madison wrote it. And the question is, what can you do about it? I think that what has to happen is that one of the things, it may not change things, but at least it's going to make it more uncomfortable, is these historians and people just have to get out and put out papers and protests and whatever they can put out say that this is anti-democracy. In Pennsylvania, we've had this guy Doug Mastriano who's running for the state of governorship, and when he's in the legislature, he's one of these proponents that said that the 2020 election was stolen, that it was fraud. Of course, they've always maintained that it was fraud only as to the presidential election. All these people, all these Republicans, got elected to the Senate, state Senate, and the state House, and to Congress. They say, "Oh, those votes were all fine."
Well, they say the Italian satellites are very clever.
Well, yeah, those and dead Venezuelan dictators.
Yeah,
but they.
Well,
they,
right, Hugo Chavez sitting up there in the sky, wherever he is, he could do anything. He had unlimited power.
But they also, but what he's pledged to do is he said that he would decertify any voting machine that he felt didn't come with the right count. Now, Josh Shapiro, who wanted to run against this guy and actually ran ads to help him get the nomination, only to find himself only 3 or 4 points ahead, has now started to attack Mastriano on Mastriano's positions. And that's one of them that's there. Mastriano also wants to say to everybody in Pennsylvania who votes that after this election, you all have to re-register. Everybody's voter registration will be canceled. And, of course, he believes that the people in the big cities, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, just aren't going to bother to go through the process.
And he may be right.
But I would think there's people up in your area that also aren't going to do that or know about it.
That's right.
It's going to require a lot of legislation. But this is the kind of stuff that they come up with.
But, of course, the main thing about Mastriano is he's really the head of the American Taliban Party. But, Christian sect. But yes. It's the same thing. He doesn't believe that the American nation should be governed by a secular government. He believes it should be a Christian government, the form of Christianity, dominionism, that he believes in, which is, got 2% of the Christians in the country go along with it. It's a tiny little sect among Christians, very right-wing. That's what he believes. It's just like the Taliban. That's the real danger. He'll finagle with the government. He'll change the form of it. He'll do whatever to guarantee that happens. Along the way, he's going to allow untrammeled power to the rich and the corporations, because that's who supports him.
Sure, but that's never said. It just happens.
You can't say that. Not allowed to say that.
No, that's how they get people to vote against their interests.
Just the opposite. He'll campaign against workers, Mexican workers. He'll campaign against Jews. He'll campaign against whoever. But he'll never say that there's no jobs. He won't say there's no jobs because the factory owners took their factories to low-wage places. He'll say, oh, no, there's no jobs because Mexicans came to take your jobs. They used to say there's no jobs because Irish came to take your jobs. Welshmen came to take your jobs. Englishmen came to take your jobs. Whoever were the immigrants came to take your jobs. Now it happens to be Mexicans. It's never the people who benefit because they found people who could work cheaper someplace else. That he never says. Because to fool you.
This is the old Thomas Frank, what's the matter with Kansas?
Yeah.
Where the people keep voting against their interests. Of course, they did wake up briefly a few years ago when they had, who's the guy that went from the cabinet to run the governorship there in Kansas, the Republican? And he destroyed the roads and he destroyed the education system.
I forget his name.
They threw him out.
Threw him out.
They threw him out. But still,
before they threw him out, he was going all over the country saying Kansas works perfectly. We're setting the example. The economic situation in Kansas is better than ever. It was bankrupt.
Yeah. Meanwhile, also in Pennsylvania, the state has the largest budget surplus it's ever had, and the governor wants to put more money in education.
Well, that's obviously wrong. That's obviously wrong.
Yeah. Both on the in the public schools and in the colleges and the universities. And the Republicans are holding up the budget to because of part of an allocation to the University of Pittsburgh. There are four schools that receive state money, the Penn State, of course. They have two systems. They have the Commonwealth system, which are smaller colleges and universities, and the four big ones. Penn State is the biggest. Temple in Philadelphia, University of Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, and Lincoln University, primarily a black
Penn
college.
State or University of Penn?
Penn State.
Penn State?
Penn State. Yeah, Penn State. University of Pennsylvania is private. I went there. Also went to Temple. But and Penn used to get a subsidy, too. I think they lost. The University of Pennsylvania used to get a subsidy. But in any event, Pittsburgh, they're holding up the whole budget, saying that the University of Pittsburgh will not get its allocation unless they stop doing what they consider to be fetal research on projects that are supported in part by the federal government and don't really use fetal tissue. They use derivative tissues from fetuses that were long ago. It took years that have evolved over the years. And what's going to happen is, and I think you looked some of it up, is how much a year does that affect the student?
It's
$15,000.
$15,000 a year. Yeah.
Yeah. I think 9,000 from the state and the rest from the school itself. But yeah, and they're hurting. This is in-state students. They're taking money away from in-state students.
Of course.
They don't care.
Of course.
Because it's their agenda. It's a power play.
Yeah, that's it.
We don't know how it's going to wind up.
Speaking of power plays, Cassidy Hutchison, who testified so powerfully before the January 6th committee the other day, at the end of her testimony, Liz Cheney made the point that the committee has received information that there are people trying to interfere with Cassidy Hutchison and other witnesses. And what they're doing is what the mafia always does. We know where you live. We know where your children go to school. We're sure you won't say the wrong things. They told her exactly the right thing. And CNN reported today that the calls came out of Mark Meadows' entourage. At the same time,
surprise,
they haven't said who. And at the same time, CNN reported that they found several Secret Service people who are willing to back up her testimony about Trump lunging forward inside the car when he was told they wouldn't take him to the demonstration.
Yeah, because the two people in the car were Secret Service or Trumpers.
They're Trumpers, right, exactly. But one of the Secret Service guys told CNN he sort of lunged forward. It was unclear whether he actually made physical contact, but he might have. I don't know.
Yeah.
They said he tried to lunge over the seat. Nobody knows why. That's what the Secret Service guy said, which basically confirms exactly what Cassidy said.
But we shouldn't even be off on this tangent. That the other stuff that you said is damning.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
damning. And this committee, who knows? The fact that Donald Trump knew the people were armed and wanted them to keep their arms and wanted to lead them up to the Capitol. And, there was a reason why Mo Brooks wore a bulletproof vest.
That's exactly right. He knew what was going on. Well, we got to stop right now. We're out of time. We'll come back to this next week.
Well, next week, the Republic is 36 years old?
However old it is, the Constitution is younger, and it may only be a week old at this point, the current Constitution.
Yeah, it may not last another year.
Yeah. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.